Thank you. Thank you. You're listening to The Horn, the head-on radio network.
Thank you.
You're listening to The Horn, the head-on radio network. listening to The Horn, the head-on radio network. Listening to The Horn, the head-on radio network.
Thank you.
You're listening to The Horn, the head-on radio network.
Thank you. Thank you.
Listening to The Horn, the head-on radio network.
Thank you.
You're listening to The Horn, the head-on radio network.
Show. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Welcome to a very windy Tuesday. It is blowing like crazy outside here in the hills and hollers of almost level West Bicod, Virginia. The dreaded four-letter word has even been mentioned in the local weather forecasts. What is the dreaded four-letter word? Snow. See, I'm the one that's been sitting around waiting for the other shoe to drop. If I see so much as a flake, there will be power swearing, Tourette's level swearing, uncontrollable, senseless. But yeah, no, it's the winds are fierce out there. Now this is a Tormented Tuesday. We're trying that one out. Because Lord knows we've got stories enough to make it clear. We've already got a post-Moran Monday nomination from Marty. Baseball's Miami Marlins, do I need to explain? I got an intimation of this earlier in email from Michael. I haven't seen the story itself. But Michael wrote earlier today with a question that just sort of caught me flat-footed. Baseball and Castro was the subject line. He said, there's a lot I don't understand about sports. And I understand it's Miami and all that. But suspending a coach for saying he respects that son of a bitch Castro? What the... At Penn State, students riot when a coach gets dumped for sheltering a serial kitty diddler, and we have a national debate about whether or not the crusty old SOB should have been allowed to coach a few more games. But speak your mind on Castro and your de facto persona non grata. What the hell? It's not like he said, occasionally the Israeli government does something I don't agree with 100%. I mean, that would be grounds for termination. Signed, Confused. Dear Confused! See, if he had just called him a son of a bitch... that would have been fine. But it's the fact that he said he respects him that landed him in the deep and smelly. Right. And I gotta, sometimes it's just an absolute joy to run in here and get behind the microphone, and this is one of those days. I have to share something. Now, it's going to be hard for you to find. I've tried to make it not hard for you to find. I sent the link along to News Ninja Susan for this evening's show post. It was just about a little over an hour ago that I got an internet from Isaac. Isaac was listening to last night's show. Isaac heard Brother Albert talking about how Sir Richard Attenborough narrates everything in his head. And Albert's suggestion that the Jersey Shore would be a much more viewable program if it was only thus narrated. Isaac then, using his skills, made Albert's vision a reality. It's
The humor lies in the nexus between the video and the audio. So running it in the show won't really work. You would just hear narration of the clever monkeys. But what Isaac did after Albert whispered the idea gently into the ear of the universe was to create a little clip called The Clever Monkeys of Jersey Shore. And what a hoot. What a hoot. And Albert is absolutely right. It is much more comprehensible. I guess it's Ozzie Guillen that's involved in the... Okay. Jersey Shore is a much better program when narrated as if it were a nature documentary. So what's happened is, if the show post is up yet and you go to headonradionetwork.com, you will find a link there. If, on the other hand, you go to my Facebook feed, or my Twitter feed, you will also find it there. You can also look on my Facebook page and find it as well. Isaac took a clip of Albert describing it in our conversation and then made it happen, and Ferg was convulsing with laughter, and I was pretty well close along there with him. Ferg has had a long day. You know, in spring, a young man's fancy turns to thoughts of cash. And Ferg, on a lark, didn't think he'd ever, they won't, walked into McDonald's one day and filled out an application. He got a call. The call led to an interview. The interview has led to a job. So my job now is to drive my son to work at his job every day. Somebody will drive him to work every day. He does not have his license yet because, the additional cost of adding a 16-year-old driver to the family insurance would be something on the order of $500 a month. Thanks for playing. No, not happening. That's the new reality around here. Eek. Just eek. Backing up to the baseball story. A quote from Dave Zirin's column today from Marty. As for Guillen, he has crumbled under the weight of all this, saying he is now flying back to Florida to apologize in person to every animal, vegetable, and mineral he might have offended. I want them to know I'm against everything in Cuba 100%. I repeat it again, the way Castro has been treating people for the last 60 years. Zirin notes, let's leave aside the rather glaring irony that the politicians, sports commentators, and Cuban exiles want to show their love of freedom by taking Guillen's job for the crime of exercising free speech. The fact is that when looking for political consistency and clarity, Ozzie Guillen is not the best place to start. The Venezuela-born Guillen's comments on Castro are not very different from what he has always said about Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez. He has made comments very favorable about Chavez and very negative. He said, Viva Chavez, after his Chicago White Sox won the 2005 World Series. He's also been one of Chavez's most high-profile critics. But you don't get to be that in Miami. Right? Yeah. So I hope you will, in fact... here, let me do this one more thing just to make things a little bit simpler. I am going to put this also into the Horn chat room. And there we go. with regard to my son getting to work. Can Ferg bike? Oh, Kath from Canada. Kath. Yes, he can. He's been a successful bike rider for several years now and has never been allowed out on the road for fear that he will be reduced to a pancake or something resembling various and sundry other local fauna by some runaway, reckless, careless, homicidal coal trucker. Plus, it would involve bicycling across the New River Gorge Bridge, which is patently illegal, being as how it's a limited access highway and everything. Two-lane roads, gravel shoulders, if there are shoulders at all in some places, and about 15 miles. Yeah, it's not really a bicyclable kind of thing. So that's, you know. But that's just the beginning of the program. I've got to find out more about this this Aussie Guillen. Okay. I understand better now. This coming in from my head writer, David, in Tennessee, also our sports editor for the program. It's market segment, Bob. The publicly financed brand new ball yard is located in the middle of the Cuban expat community of South Florida. The club's intent is to tap into the Spanish-speaking folks in South Florida to make their club a success. It has been rightly said that to mention Castro in any tone other than disparaging in South Florida is way, way bad, much like mentioning Hitler to Jews as not that bad a guy. See Marge shot some 30 years ago. Yeah, you remember that, right? Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying he was a good guy, but I'm not saying all his ideas were bad either. Marge shot Cincinnati, big German population, but there's also a Jewish population who said, wait a minute! So, in a freewheeling sort of way, Guillen said, I love Castro. He's the toughest guy I know. They've tried to kill him, but he's survived. This is the second time that Ozzie Guillen has spoken well of Senor Castro's durability. The large... Oh, God. The largest Cuban expat organization has promised to picket the new ball yard till, quote, either Guillen is fired or Castro dies. Sadly, I'm guessing that the former is more likely in the short run than the latter. But can we take a moment to acknowledge the truth of what Ozzie Guillen said? He is a tough guy. I mean, the United States, we tried to poison his beard. We tried to... No, really. Really, we did. We tried to poison a skin diving suit so that he would itch to death. Really, Jethro Bodine... Agent Fred, there in the bowels of the NSA. Evening. How you doing, pal? Really, the geniuses at the CIA came up with that one. What we'll do is we'll put poison powder in a scuba suit, and we'll give it to Castro, and he'll die. Oh, good work, boys! Really, the way we've behaved toward Cuba has been shameful. Because we have engaged in something that, oh, the last I checked, international law kind of frowns on. We've engaged in collective punishment of a people in recourse against its government, and isn't that illegal? Yeah, I thought so. But you know what? Let's see. Eisenhower, Kennedy, LBJ, Nixon, Ford, Carter, Reagan, Poppy, Clinton, W, and Obama. That's 11 presidents. That Castro has successfully resisted in one degree or another attempts to subvert the government there in Cuba. And, of course, as Dave Zirin notes, those are some freedom-loving Cubans down there in South Florida. Freedom-loving! Because here in America, the land where a person may freely speak his mind, not so much. But to be clear, where Dave Zirin is concerned, no, they are not violating his right to free speech. Because the government is not cracking down on DN's comment, the free market is. And that is not covered under the First Amendment any more than John Rocker's comments about New Yorkers, etc., were a First Amendment violation. You'd be surprised how difficult that is to get people to understand. Marty noting, funny how they in Little Havana seem to forget that after Katrina, when our own government wasn't willing to lift a finger to help Americans, Fidel and Chavez were offering aid, engineers, and doctors, which W turned down because Little Havana wouldn't have liked it. Yeah, let them. I think we need to let them die because that'll mean that they're more free than if they took that communist help. Yeah. Yeah, as David notes, again, anything other than speaking of Castro as a murderous villain twirling his snidely whiplash-like handlebar mustache and sweeping his black cape about him while tying a Cuban expat named Little Nell to the railroad tracks in the Florida Keys is taken by the Cuban expatriate community as supporting his dictatorial ways. So Ozzy's on the spit and is turning slowly. Slowly he turns. Yeah, and again, as Dave Zirin noted, that, well, when it comes to looking for political consistency and clarity, Ozzy Guillen is not the best place to start. Yeah. Now, I want to share a couple of things with you. One, this one goes back a little ways. This comes in from Lynette in Detroit. Lynette said, "Bob, you did it again. I just listened to last Monday's podcast." This is last Monday, not last night. "And you had me sobbing talking about your dad and daughter. I thought about my own dad who died in 1972 at the age of 47 when I was 19. I adored him, and I still think about him every day. Please tell your daughter it's cool to think about her grandpa. She shouldn't stop. When she remembers him, it means she remembers something about him that she loved, and love is always good. Thanks and peace, Lynette in Detroit." And it was a touching email. I love to see that kind of commentary come in on the show. I noted to Lynette that I took her offered words as a compliment, but I said I also worry at this propensity of mine to make folks cry instead of laugh. I hope that's not the show's default effect. And Lynette responded by saying, "They were meant to be highly complimentary, but don't worry, I also do plenty of giggling and plenty of raging right along with you when I listen to the show. Keep it real and have a good week." So yeah, we're giggling along, and you know, that's one of those giggle moments when you get to watch the clever monkeys of Jersey Shore. There are a couple of places in that video that Isaac has pulled together where the narration perfectly matches. They will try different things. Yeah, and their whole party cups up drinking, guzzling. I'll never be able to see even so much as a clip of what's her name, the Snooki or the Situation, without thinking of the clever monkeys of Jersey Shore. Thank you, Isaac, and thank you, Albert, for inspiring it all. Also, this in regarding last night's program. Dr. John in New York writing, "I was blown away by last night's first hour. I really don't have anything to add to your excellent conversation with Mr. Mann, except that it was the sort of thing you could not find on any other radio broadcast anywhere. Even otherwise good shows like NPR's Science Friday or Fresh Air could never dedicate so much time to such an interesting topic and just let a knowledgeable source talk. And with those shows, odds would be good that the next segment would be some dreadful apology piece for an oil company or the military-industrial complex. Not a concern on the Horn. Your side of the conversation gave the interview a sure and steady guidance while remaining unobtrusive. Just an excellent, compelling broadcast. In appreciation, says Dr. John, I'm doing another listener challenge tonight. I'll match the first $50 in contributions. It's a great way to contribute to the Thrifty 250 and double your money all at once. Thank you sincerely, Dr. John, and we appreciate the challenge. And more than that, more than anything, we appreciate the fact that these little attempts to bring meaningful information along matter and strike a chord and have a certain resonance. So if you match and you can see this by going over to headonradionetwork.com at the little widget, we have finally cleared the 1 week hurdle. And if you match Dr. John's contribution, it will take us up to it'll take us up to $710, which will be moving us along in the direction we need to be going, because we are just a wee bit behind right now. Thank you for the other contributions that have also come in, the one contribution last night, as well as the one from Dr. John, and a couple earlier today. Thank you very, very kindly. It has been much appreciated. I want to back up for a minute, if I may, please. Because with yesterday and the conversation with Mr. Mann having been scheduled, it left out, there just wasn't a lot of commentary space for what happened over the weekend. And what happened over the weekend was twofold. Obviously, Sunday was Easter. And with Sunday being Easter, it also, every once in a while, Easter coincides with the Masters. Or perhaps it should be renamed the Masses. Because a bigger showing of racism, bigotry, misogyny, I don't know if it's possible to find one in 21st century America than that celebration of white privilege in Augusta, Georgia. But I got a note from my head writer, David, in Tennessee, having caught the tail end of the tournament. And he said, tradition, because that's the way CBS pitches it, a tradition like no other. And there's some tinkling, tinny piano, whorehouse piano music behind it, that kind of thing. No offense to whorehouse piano players. It's right. Tradition. A well-tended process or concept that continues. Augusta National Golf Course. A golf course that is more beautiful than any other inland course. To be prettier, a coastline is needed. It is a beautiful place. Augusta National. The Masters. Put in motion by one Bobby Jones. Fine son of the South, Mr. Jones refused to ever become a professional golfer. Instead, remained an amateur and remains an icon of the sport. The plus four, the slicked back hair, the sweaters, the swing. The Masters. The tournament that in the 30s featured blindfolded colored boys in boxing matches for the gentleman's enjoyment after a challenging day on the course. Slug it out for that 2 bits, boys! Swing more, swing! Gotta be quiet and wait till you hear him and swing at the noise! You want that 50 cents, don't you? Augusta National, an organization that would disband before allowing a woman full participation. Notes David, oh, those traditions! Watching the final round on Sunday, David noted, now this rich pig sporting event is in the grip of one Oogie Oosterboofen. He, a proud South African, speaks good Afrikaans, he does. A product of apartheid? Why, yes, thanks for asking. Some coloreds and blacks did give his family untold benefit over their generations. Thus, he had time to play golf, rent flats in England, and practice, practice, practice! A tradition unlike any other? Not really. It's a time-honored tradition here in America. America, that's America spelled with three K's, coloreds giving the white man the help he needs to preserve his bragging rights about some contorted tradition unrelated to any sort of common good. But it's a damned fine tradition. You know, heritage, not hate. Yeah, right. But hold on. A guy named Bubba from Baghdad, Florida, wins it, and he's left-handed. That creative 1 in 10. Still a sport of privilege for the 1%, but at least the Afrikaner didn't win. And though it is not Wednesday, it is worth noting that when a guy named Bubba wins the Masters in a year when the female CEO of IBM shows up in pink and is not allowed the vaunted green jacket of other corporate sponsors, and a guy named Bubba wins, well, you know, golly Moses, what, 2,300 years ago when Aristotle in his Metaphysics began discussing what the nature of the divine was, and Aristotle suggested the concept, I believe, of the prime mover, a sort of a giant clockmaker outside the universe who puts his little great big Rube Goldberg device together and flicks it with a finger and then whisks himself away to let it go and good luck, enjoy the fish. 2,300 years later, we have in this year's winner of the Masters, we have the sure proof of the true nature of the divine. Every day, every week, every month, every year, every instant, I am reminded a little bit more. If I'm going to be some sort of religionist, I will worship at the altar of the God of Irony. Congratulations, Bubba! Well, thank you. I'm just glad there weren't no women here to see me win. Bubba. And, of course, it's carried on CBS, and CBS doubled down. Because immediately after the playoff was over, what did you hear but the ubiquitous tick, 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 tick of the introduction of 60 Minutes? And in 60, and there was, let's see, there was a story about austerity and the trouble with the euro, in which some person who probably has lobster for lunch three times a week and twice for breakfast said that the Greek people had been living on a credit card beyond their means, and they've got to tighten their belts. They need, you know, they've got to engage some austerity. And I thought, they? Who's they? People who worked all their lives? Street sweepers? School teachers? Janitors? Yeah. They're the ones who pay for all that excess. And yet these clueless lobster lunchers don't understand why they would run around and set fire to stuff and get pissed. What? Hey, freedom's not just another word for nothing left to lose, right? They've got to stop living. They've got to engage in some austerity and tighten their belts. Well, what happens to a people when tightening one's belt yields the sound of snapping vertebrae and ribs pressing against spines? Because that's where they are. Meanwhile, the lobster lunch crowd is still in Greece and in Berlin and in the rest of Europe. The people who profited by all of that lending, there's no belt tightening there. Oh, by the way, David noting, sadly, when Bubba accepted his green jacket and plaque, he went all Tebow, a-thanking the ghost in the sky. No surprise. Speaking of Tim Tebow, by the way, did you catch this? I saw this over the weekend, and I went, what? Now that he's been traded to the Jets, little Timmy Gebo, Jesus' favorite quarterback, well, one, he preached an Easter sermon down in Texas. But two, prior to that, I guess he wanted to look his absolute best. He was caught on camera in West Hollywood getting a mani and a pedi. Not Hollywood. West Hollywood. We have some listeners in that neighborhood, in that neck of the woods, and I won't be the one to tell you what the delineation is, but there is a distinct difference between going to West Hollywood and going to Hollywood. Now, I mean, there still is, right? Yes. New York Jets quarterback, backup quarterback, that is. Because Mark Sanchez would say, you put backup in front of that! New York Jets backup quarterback, Tim Tebow, friend of Jesus, went to one of the gayest places on the planet. And I don't use that as a pejorative because, I mean, you know, who cares? Welcome. Enjoy life. Live and be well. But he did, and he went there to get a mani and a pedi. So, yes, I'm sorry, David mentioned Bubba going all Tebow. And Tebow, well, I don't know if he keeps going to West Hollywood for manis and pedis, going Tebow may take on an entirely different definition, don't you think? You got to wonder, is Ted Haggard in Tim Tebow's phone book on his little cell phone? Still no. Okay, David. New York Jets quarterback, Tim Tebow, New York Jets alleged quarterback. I think you really do have to put alleged in front of that. But no, 60 Minutes was a doubling down. It was a 1% double down after the whole misogynistic, racist tableau of the Masters. David, in his email, mentioned that business of boys of color blindfolded boxing for the amusement of the white folks there at the course in years past. And not that I doubted it or anything, I went and looked it up. And it's true. It really happened. And at a time when, you know, maybe it wasn't 2 bits, maybe it wasn't 50 cents, maybe it was a $5 bill. And a kid could eat for a week on that $5 bill if he'd only perform for the amusement of the wealthy white people. Disturbing country. Of course, if you were listening to the conversation with Charles C. Mann last night, you know that, and this is not historical revisionism. What we've been told all along was a revisionism. The reality is that persons of color in both continents are the ones who, as he noted, built the roads, farmed the land, built the boats, laid out the streets, built the capital of this nation and its executive mansion. Who defined the terms of the English that we speak. You know, you take a good racist cracker down in the South and you explain to him that gooey Southern English that he speaks, it that way because that is the way the Africans learned English and it was passed on to the white people, he will turn purple. But for all the color turning, it won't change the facts. just won't. But like I said, it was a 1% double down after the Masters on CBS. On the one hand, you had the snooty hand-wringing of whatever shall we do about the Euro that included statements that nations like Greece, Italy, Spain, Portugal, and Ireland need to become more austere. And, of course, you know by now that austerity is code for screw the poor. And, of course, they had the obligatory footage some guy with a mask on spraying with an anarchy circle on one side of a door and spraying a red circle with the Euro mark and a slash through that on the other side of the door. Oh, yeah, it was disgusting. Andy in California noting, yeah, I heard 60 Minutes, too. It was awful. No mention of Goldman Sachs' role in taking debt off the books of the Greek government so the Greeks could meet the Maastricht Accord for entrance into the EU's Euro currency regime. Greece did not meet the annual 3% and total debt 60% of GDP Maastricht requirements, according to the New York Times and Der Spiegel in 2001. Then a piece was done on polo teams and players in the U.S. Oh, yeah, I'm getting there, Andy. I'm getting there. It gets followed up by a puff piece with Laura Logan on polo's resurgence in the America and the face of the Ralph Lauren advertising campaign, an absolute world-beaten polo player from Argentina named Nacho, who seems like a decent guy. And lo and behold, there's a story within the story of how he's been integral in reaching out to an inner-city Philadelphia program that teaches little children of color to ride horses and play polo. Don't! I'm not kidding. And they just became the national high school polo champions. How many high school polo teams are there in the United States? And they didn't play it full on, but there is a little aspect, and this being an anniversary or near the anniversary and everything, I think it's worthwhile noting. This is the anniversary of Branch Rickey buying the contract of Jackie Robinson from the Montreal Royals for the Brooklyn Dodgers. Laura Logan explained it for a long time. They didn't win any games, and they could hardly play. And the lady who set up the well-intended program with used equipment and, I guess, used horses to teach kids from the hood of Philly how to play polo, she said, you know, we weren't very welcome at some of the other places that we went to play with some of the white schools. But now they are the best in the country. And one young man was brought out to shake hands at this one particular polo match on Governor's Island, to shake hands with, and he was, of course, a young black man, to shake hands with the vaunted Nacho. And then there was a segment about what it's like to raise polo ponies, and how every polo player has to have a string of at least a dozen, and you can only run one horse for about 3 minutes before you have to change out horses, and how back in the 20s and 30s it was a booming sport in America. And that has sadly gone into decline, that they're trying to bring it back. Yeah, because the 1% needs one more way to rub the rest of our noses in it. Hey, maybe Ferg can quit at McDonald's and go be a stable boy and shovel shit for the 1% in their polo barns. How about that? Andy noting, what fluff garbage to bolster the plutocracy. And then the one that really, really just put the icing on the cake for me, and apparently did so as well for Andy. And the last program, an expose of an orchestra in the capital of the Congo. Gee, says Andy, how totally worthless a show. This was 1 hour dedicated to promote the plutocracy. And the one in the piece about the orchestra in Kinshasa. Was breathtaking in its tone deafness. Because the intro, the pitch piece for it, the teaser, if you will, at the beginning of 60 Minutes said, these black people living in the Congo have no money. They barely have enough to eat. But this is not a sad story. Wait till you hear what they can do. And a quick cutaway to them playing the Ode to Joy, their symphony playing the Ode to Joy. At that point in time, I stuck around the TV. Granted, I could have gone over and watched the Tony Bourdain marathon, I presume, or something about people who look for junk in junkyards on some other channel. I missed that too. But when you get an opportunity to view full on pay-ons to the 1%, you don't turn away. And that segment on the orchestra in Kinshasa was breathtakingly 1%. So they tell the story about how they pulled together instruments and a man learned music from scratch, and you're going, wow, this is admirable. And they start playing and then pulling, and we had 12 violinists and only 6 violins, and sometimes a person would only be able to practice for 15 minutes before he had to, and you're thinking, wow, this is grit, this is determination. And then it changed. About 2 minutes later, that's when a documentary was made, and no one in the world knew about this little orchestra in Kinshasa until a pair of German filmmakers made a documentary about it. And then some opera singers in Germany, people in Germany began sending musical instruments, and 2 German opera singers went down there, and wait till you hear what they did! And what they did, there was footage of a German man teaching an African man to sing Italian opera. You know, that noise. And then there was the German lady who was teaching the women folk singers. You know, the whole, and you think of the whole Wagnerian with the horns on the helmet and the brass bullet bra and all of that stuff. Oh, Brunhilde, you're so lovely. Yes, I know it. I can't help it. That's my exposure to opera. And she said, well, we thought they had to come down here because we saw these people, and it was clear that these people needed our help. And at that point, I just about slapped... I didn't mean to put so much force into it, but I about slapped myself silly in the head. These people. And see, previously, I'm pretty sure, previously in the piece on European poor people's austerity, I had heard that phrase again. These people. I mean, we're getting these people to death. All over the place. And yeah, I'm a culture geek. I'm a culture nerd. And when I heard the German opera singer say, we have to help these people learn how to properly sing, I thought, my God, you are in the middle of the cradle of humanity itself. and you think you know how to sing because you can warble according to some European scale? Sugar, there should have been some real cultural cross-connectivity here. You should have been taken off. You should have gone off with some folks down, you know, out into the bush. And you would have heard some real singing, baby. You would have heard the kind of singing that got sung when human beings first figured out they had voices, sunshine. Not, not something that sounds like a dog getting kicked. But once again, and you know, I was watching this full knowledge of everything that I'd read in 1493 and knowing about the conversation that we were going to be having last night. And I thought, my God, white people on this planet are not going to be happy until they have erased every last vestige of every other culture. Whether it be the mournful pitch of an Andean pipe, or the mystical throb of a tabla, or the mesmerizing chant of a bush people raptured in their joy. These people. But you'll be glad to know that it's not limited to German opera singers. America has a these people, and this these people problem, and this particular manifestation of the these people problem is straight from the top shelf of the God of Irony basket, or collection, I guess, not basket, collection. Now, what do I mean? I mean this. For some reason or another, having to do with things I don't even pretend to understand, Radio Rwanda decided it would be a good thing to ask, no, really, Herman Cain. About the so-called war on women. I don't like that phrase because I don't like the use of war as a term of casual conversation. But he was invited on some show on Radio Rwanda to ask about new polling data that shows that President Obama is way out in front of Willard Doggone Carr Romney on issues relating to women. Here is Herm. Here is Herm's explanation. Sit tight.
The next one's here. Women's issues. A lot of press on this issue in recent days. President Obama seems to be winning that argument as well. But let's throw in this one more, which is who has the preference among men? Mitt Romney gets that one, 52% to 44%. What does all that add up to you?
Well, all that adds up to me is quite simply when they are going head-to-head, and Mitt Romney has the opportunity to promote his message and has his opportunity to better inform people, I believe that you're going to hear again, I believe that you're going to see those close. That's an indication. Yes, President Obama is very likable to most people if you just look at him and his family. But if you look at his policies, which is what most people disagree with, it's a different story. And I think many men are much more familiar with the failed policies than a lot of other people, as well as the general public. So I believe that there's still a huge opportunity for Mitt Romney. I'm not particularly bothered by those. Now,
you got that? Women folk in the audience? You're not even Americans anymore. You're other people. Men are much more familiar with policy than other people, because that's what we have here on planet Earth. We have men and other people. You know, the vaginistas. Other people. Yeah, you'd think that, yeah, I mean, you'd think that this, I don't know, that it was suddenly Latin class and there was suddenly the feminine gender, the masculine gender, and neuter. Other people. I think many men are much more familiar with the failed policies than people with breasts and vaginas. You know, other people. And women, if you have any questions, ask them to you of your husband when you get home, for it is a shame that a woman should speak in church. Remember, we went down that road. Jim noting, your lack of exposure to opera is regrettable. Jim, you are assuming facts not in evidence, my friend. I have been exposed to opera. I've been exposed to a lot of opera. I despise it. It's the ultimate 1% art form. Way, way, way back when I was studying theater in college, we went over a series of different kinds of theater, and the phrase they used for opera was dead theater, because nothing new happens. It's all formal. It's like kabuki. And for me, listening to it is like...